Welcome to another shiny episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts, Andrew, David, and Jen. This week our topic is New X-Men by Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely. And now the cast begins.
Okay, everybody, welcome to another ecstatic episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast.
You know what's funny about that?
What?
There's actually an X-Men comic called Ecstatics.
Really?
Yep.
Was it about, like, mutants with staticky powers?
No, but I think Dupe
Get
is from that comic.
Statics? Ecstatics?
But it has Dupe. Do you know who Dupe is?
D-O-O-P?
Yeah.
No.
He's an X-Men character.
I think I've heard the name before. What's his power?
I think he's an alien. Maybe we should start this episode over again.
No, honestly, I'm more interested in that than this comic. So that's
okay,
how
so
I
let me
feel
just say
about.
This. Dupe is like, he looks like Slimer from Ghostbusters.
Nice. That sounds cool to me.
Okay, so this week we read Grant Morrison's run on, part of Grant Morrison's run on the New X-Men from 2001,
yes.
Art by Frank Quitely.
Yes, Frank Quitely, and the later issues were by somebody else.
That's correct.
Igor, right? Igor?
I assume it's Igor.
Igor Volshansky or something like that?
I think you made that up, probably.
Probably did. But yeah, it's issues 114 to 126 and X-Men Annual.
New X-Men Annual.
New X-Men Annual, my bad.
Number one.
Uno. Yeah, so I think it's already pretty clear how I feel about this comic. I don't want to color the conversation, because most of the notes that we have for this are my notes, which are all pretty negative. So I want to hear from you guys first before I go on a rant. If I end up going.
Let
on
me
a
just
rant.
Say this, Andy. There was no one named Igor related involved in this comic.
Come on,
there's even Van Scriver.
Like no, it was like a penciler or a colorist.
Oh,
or some
well,
shit.
Ethan Van Scriver.
No,
Van Scrivener?
Like if you look at issues 20 plus, I think the artist is Igor somebody.
No, the issue number 123, Pencilers, is Tom Derenick. No, not Tom Bergeron.
Sorry.
Tom Derenick and Ethan Van Sciver.
I swear to God, there was a guy named Igor.
Well,
Try 126.
Oh God, we're so good at this. So anyways, Andy, what did you think about this comic?
I hated it.
Aww.
I mean, not like hated it, I feel like it... This was a good comic that got Morrison'd.
It began with Cavemen.
There were definitely some issues where I thought, man, this is total Grant Morrison.
Yeah. For me, that was like all of them.
Some of it was not that bad.
Okay,
okay.
Number 124 is by Igor Corday.
Okay.
Bam. There's not Igor.
Well, you forgot about Ethan, so
yeah.
Boo on you.
Boo on you. What did you think of this comic, David?
I didn't hate it.
Okay. That's why I don't want to dominate the conversation. Tell me your general opinion of this comic.
I thought it had some cool things in it.
All right.
There were things that bothered me in it. So, okay. So, Frank Quitely is pretty well-renowned as an artist.
Yeah.
And, like, All-Star Superman, pretty great.
Pretty great. And he drew Wii 3,
yep.
Which had amazing art.
This comic... I don't think this is his best work. Wait, I was not supposed to talk about negative things.
No, it's fine. You can talk about negative things. Just realize that when
I
start talking, it's probably going to be all negative.
I thought the art was good.
I liked it.
But I don't think it was as strong as, like, All-Star Superman, for example.
It's not what you've come to expect from Frank Quitely.
Yeah.
But to be fair, like, with Wii 3 and All-Star Superman, those were both, like, mini-series, short runs.
But,
and this is a monthly production, so you can
expect
the quality
to go down. But All-Star
Superman,
wasn't that
a
monthly, too?
If it was monthly, I know it was like but it was still limited to, like, 12 issues.
But he didn't even do 12 issues on this.
That's true.
Because he was done by, he did 8 issues.
Yeah.
Or 9 issues.
What about you, Jen? What did you think of this one?
I didn't have too many problems with it, honestly. It
okay.
felt very Grant Morrison. I actually think it's some of Grant Morrison's better work. Maybe that's not saying much, because, I mean, I guess I like The Filth, but a lot of the stuff I've read by him, I was kind of like, meh. I liked Wii 3. Aside from that, I don't know.
Yeah, you know, I think that was my big takeaway from this, I think I finally realized that as much as I kind of like freaky stuff in comics every once in a while, I don't think I like Grant Morrison anymore. I mean, maybe I did, but I don't know when it happened. I think I stopped liking Grant Morrison, and this is what made me get to that point. Because honestly, I don't like this comic, but this story, the Cassandra Nova stuff, Emma Frost coming in, the Wild Sentinels, there's a lot of really cool ideas here and neat shit that I really like and that I think is really cool. But when I walk away from this comic, I don't want to read any more of it.
There's parts of this that simply do not make sense. And I think that tends to be a Morrison problem, where some of it is like just insanely imaginative and really well thought out, and some of it is a bit beyond his readers.
Okay, so I'm going to let you guys go first. Tell me what you liked most about this comic, or what you thought was cool here. I want to try to have an open dialogue.
I want you to go first, actually.
Okay. I think my problem here, aside from the art, because it feels like such a departure from last week when we read God Loves, Man Kills, when the penciling work was very straight, very clean, a lot of direct lines. And then here we go to Frank Quitely, who's really good at drawing pudgy fingers. Everybody looks like extra pudgy or too fleshy. Something's a little weird about the way everybody looks. And then, so visually it makes it feel off. And then I think Grant Morrison has this penchant for trying to make things feel extra gross or extra grimy or extra something that when he's doing his own work comes off just fine, but on these characters feels a little wrong. Like the one that sticks out in my head, maybe it's because it's in a later issue, when Jean Grey is talking to the press, right? And she says, imagine you're Charles Xavier and everybody's mind is open to you and you can see all of their inner, you know, all of their inner thoughts like raw guts. And it's like, I can't imagine Jean Grey comparing people's minds to raw guts in front of the press, who she's trying to convince these people that she is not a terrorist, and she's going to talk about raw guts. Like, it's just, there's weird wording. And the other one that came off weird was when she was talking about Charles Xavier, right? And she said his mind is like, it's like watching somebody's mind turn into confetti. And it's like, she has known and loved this man for 20 plus years of her life. I think she would have chose a more tender simile there than like confetti. You know, it feels heartless and replaced with just extra witty or extra weird or extra this extra Morrison-y that just doesn't feel right for on these characters. And so the whole thing, even though there's great ideas in here that I love, it all just kind of feels off and weird and gross to me.
Well, it almost feels like the kind of goody-two-shoesness of Scott and Jean is critiqued. Because earlier in the comic, I think Wolverine, that happens, we should talk about that. He says, like, you know, you two are made for each other, you're the do-gooders. And Scott and Jean didn't really feel like do-gooders in this group. I mean,
I think relative to everyone else, they kind
of
did.
Yeah, but kind of shitty relative to... I mean, they weren't shitty people, but I guess kind of gritty relative to everyone else who's, like, doing horrible things.
Yeah.
It's not... Also, okay, did Wolverine kiss Jean, or was it the other way around? Like,
what I think he kissed her.
I think he did kiss her.
But then he was like, this won't work? Okay.
I think she came out there looking for comfort, and he kissed her and said... Like, he kissed her because it's an opening and he'll do it. But then he's like, you know, like, she came out there looking for comfort and it was part of his way of reassuring her, look, this won't work. We've tried this before. It doesn't feel right. We know it doesn't feel right. Go back to him.
Okay. That's reasonable.
Because there had been, like, Wolverine had pursued her early in the Marvel... In X-Men,
mm-hmm.
but she always rebuffed him because
of her relationship with, because she was with Scott. And at this point, I think Wolverine just knows it's not going to work, and so he reminds her, because she was always attracted to him, on some level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think it's that interplay between, like, the good guy that you know is right for you versus the bad guy that's sexy that you want to go spend the weekend with.
Mm-hmm.
Like, come on. We all know you're going to go to Scott, so why even dick around here?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
So, that was my rant. I feel good having gotten it out of the way. Now I'm not just sitting here seething.
What? So I didn't hate the comic, right? But I'm having trouble, like, picking certain aspects that I really liked. I think I just... it was an enjoyable read overall. But there are a lot of parts of the comic, like small details, that I didn't really... I just didn't... I think overall as a whole it's fine, but if I think about a lot of these details, I see where you're coming from. There's like little things where it's like a little, maybe it's a little bit overdone. Like, they rescue this mutant from Australia, Wolverine and Cyclops do, and he's got three faces. That's fine, okay, that probably... Yeah. Would be a mutation that might
not every mutation, like we said last week, maybe not every mutation is useful or gives you a superpower. Sometimes you just get three faces.
But the thing is, it's like, okay, here's this guy. He has three faces. That's kind of a sad mutation. You wouldn't want that kind of thing. And then he gets thrown into this battle with Sentinels, with Wolverine and Cyclops, who don't do a very good job of protecting him.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
They, like, dive behind cover. Cyclops and Wolverine are... in the cover, and Wolverine's trying to help this guy stay undercover, and he gets his knee shot off. Okay? That's, like, the first thing that happens. And then he just dies.
Scott kills him, more specifically.
Yeah.
I mean, that was really dark.
And it's like, okay, what was the point of that?
Yeah, and I think, on the whole, these X-Men don't seem to really give much of a fuck about keeping their moral high ground.
Yeah.
They're way more, well, gotta kill a dude. Kill a dude. You know, whereas last week, we saw them purposefully standing in the way, willing to get themselves injured to keep that moral high ground. Here they're just like, fuck, gotta kill somebody, kill somebody.
And they get back to, like, the mansion, and nobody even asks. It's like, hey, didn't you guys go to Australia to rescue a guy?
Oh yeah, no one said anything.
Yeah.
It's like, oh yeah, we lost him in Ecuador. Moving along. I don't know, it's...
Yeah, and like
the more I think about it, it's things like that that make it feel like a Grant Morrison comic.
Yeah,
for better or for worse, you know.
And you're scrolling through the part with Dentist Trask.
Yeah,
right. And like, okay, I understand this is maybe how Cassandra Nova's powers work, and maybe Cassandra Nova has to like climb inside him or whatever. That's fine, but like the whole thing with him having to talk about, oh yeah, it really is the deep, dark part of me that really does want to become, you know, the genocidal maniac, and that's really inside all of us, this part of us that wants to be bad but can't come out. I'm like, no! Why is this even here? None of this is necessary. Why did Trask have to make this happen? Sure, maybe Cassandra's Nova twisted and she wanted to see the human do it, but so far as I know, she doesn't hate humans. She hates mutants. So why is she fucking with this guy?
Well, she doesn't feel threatened by humans, I think is what they established.
Yeah, no word they say.
Well, see, she doesn't think anybody exists but her. Think about it more, it's like... So that was, initially, that's what they thought Cassandra Nova's thing was, is that she was yet a further step in evolution beyond mutations. But then that's completely ignored later, and it's like, oh, wait, she just is Professor X's mind twin? Like, I don't understand exactly how that worked. Like,
the disembodied emotional twin. Avatar.
She was like the space moon. What was it?
Mumudrai.
Mumudrai. It's Mumadri, like Mumudrai. Yeah. It's,
I don't know.
God damn it, Andy.
Sorry. This is why I didn't want to go first.
Yeah, I will say, like, a big fault of this comic is that it does the whole humans. Every single human on Earth thinks X-Men are evil, or that mutants are evil.
Yeah.
Not just the protesters, but, like, even the reporters they bring in, and even Beast's love interest is, like, yeah, I flew across the the country to cancel our date.
No, see, Beast's love interest, I understand, right? Because, all right, if I have a fiance and if tomorrow she turned into an animal and everybody started saying bestiality stuff, it would make my relationship a lot more difficult, you know? And, like, I love her and I'm committed, so that wouldn't change my relationship. But so far as I know, they've been on a couple dates.
Yeah, I mean,
like, I can understand her saying, look, I'm not into bestiality and I have a career and this is hurting my life and I can't handle this strain.
It's the way she starts framing it at the end.
Yeah.
That makes it seem like her problem is with him. It is not the attention they're getting, but with him not being normal.
Yeah.
And even the news reporters who come in for that big, like, Xavier's Last Testament interview thing were very hostile for people who are supposed to be unbiased journalists, right?
But to be fair, I would be hostile against these X-Men too, because they go in there like that, and then I think Jean Grey ends up wiping the last 30 seconds of their mind, like, two or three different times.
Yeah.
You know, like, they seem to, like, these X-Men seem to not give a fuck about crossing that moral boundary of just invading random people's minds and dicking around with shit.
Which I think someone brings up at some point. Like, I don't want you in there. At the same time, I feel like a non-Morrison-written Jean Grey would have never done that. That's not who Jean is. She doesn't mess with people and, I mean, she doesn't want to be in people's minds. She wants to just do her thing.
Yeah. I mean, to me, that's something Emma Frost would do. No problem.
Yeah, yeah.
Emma Frost wouldn't give a fuck.
I will say, a thing I did like in this was the characterization of Emma.
Mm-hmm.
Because she came off as, well, a prissy bitch, but they also kind of showed her softer side where they discover her in, was it Genoa?
Genosha?
Genosha. Yeah. First, after it's been destroyed and, you know, she has the dead girl in her arms and she's like, well, fix it! And she's just so traumatized and it's like, that's not a way in which we view Emma Frost. She's prissy and fashionable and a horrible person, and that's kind of who her character has been so far.
Yeah.
But she had good depth here, and I appreciate that.
She's kind of a badass also.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And her her girls are kind of badass too. The Stepford Cuckoos.
The Cuckoos are awesome. I love them.
They were really cool. See, that's the thing, is there's a lot of stuff in this comic I really like. Like, the part... Okay. And as I was reading this, I realized when my breaking point happened, right? When Jean Grey is out on the front lawn defending the school against the U-Men?
Oh, yeah.
Or was it, well, I don't know if
it was U-Men.
U-Men, yeah. And she, like, started talking them down, and then she started getting her powers going, and the Phoenix thing started happening, and then I was like, oh, fuck. Okay, yeah, maybe this all has to... Maybe it all had to be this fucked up to push her to that point so that the Phoenix thing can happen. And then, sure, Phoenix is trite and whatever, and that's, you know, you see Jean Grey, you think either retcon or Phoenix. So maybe it's a little trite, but it's trite because it's cool, and because everybody likes Phoenix, and I want to see how this works out. That's neat, cool. And then it, like, goes from that to, like, Beast still all, like, fucked up and broken with, like, shit hanging off of him, holding, like, fetus Cassandra Nova body, like, covered in slimy goo. I'm like, why the fuck, Grant? Why?
I mean, that was a pretty badass Jean Grey moment. And I was kind of like, you know, I was thinking, like, the U-Men should not be messing with, like, the most powerful force in the universe, first off. Second, she's going to, like, change the world right now, and it's going to be cool. And then, I mean, it didn't bother me that Beast was like that and he was holding the corpse. It was that it broke the tension. And I felt like there was a build-up to something, like, really exciting or different that we didn't see. Because I think Grant Morrison dealing with Phoenix, like, the Phoenix, would have been really neat, because he has a strange imagination.
Yeah, and something like the Phoenix would be cool to see him tackle. And maybe this comic gets there. I don't know.
Yeah, that's probably foreshadowing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I honestly, like, on an overarching plot level, I had problems with this, especially with Cassandra Nova being Xavier's, like, spirit twin. And there was some implication that everybody has one, except this one latched onto the world's greatest psychic, so it manifested.
It seemed to me that the reason she manifested it was because he was such a powerful psychic. And it's like a mind twin.
Mm-hmm.
And because his mind is really strong, his mind twin is also really strong.
I guess. But then she was also like a physical twin. I mean, I understand what you're saying. I just...
Well, they said that she was stillborn.
Yeah.
So there was a body. But then she like escaped into the thing.
Into the sewer? They said like something about how she...
Something about sewer walls for 15 years or something.
Yeah.
Maybe it was a psychological sewer wall.
Maybe. So, I mean, that stuff was kind of messed up. But the writing on a micro level, like the actual dialogue was done pretty well, I would argue. And the comic itself, especially for Grant Morrison, was easy to follow. And I thought that was nice. There was a lot of text, but I was never confused at any point. And I don't just mean... And I mean, that happens with comics that aren't written by Grant Morrison as well, where you're kind of like, there's something weird with the art and what shifted here, but it flowed very nicely. And I mean, part of that I attribute to the artist, because they did a good job showing us what we needed to see. But I guess on a macro level, this was a problem comic, and on a micro level, I enjoyed it. Put it that way.
Okay. I mean, there's so much stuff in here I do like. Like, if you are evil and you're in Charles' body and you want to kill everybody... Fuck, I would dial up the Shi'ar. That's a smart damn move. You know, like, there's stuff in here that I wouldn't have thought to put in that works really, really well. And then there's stuff like Angel, who I fucking hate. That stupid whore.
Well, she's
so
just...
stupid and ungrateful.
And she doesn't understand what's going on. She's scared
and she's dumb.
And alone. Well, yeah.
I mean, okay. She's dumb and ungrateful. She doesn't understand what's going on. This is great. I buy all that. But then when Wolverine rolls up and says, quit trying to be all hard, and then, like, backhands her, right? Like, done. Okay. That's your wake-up moment. Time for the character to wake up and become the person... No, no, she's still a stupid fucking whore. But I think the cuckoos finally get...
Yeah, like when Angel goes, I was walking around down here looking for drugs, and they're like, you've never done drugs.
Yeah.
We're in your mind.
We know when you're fucking lying. Quit trying to be all hard.
But then they're like, they say something like, well, she's had sex, which we haven't, or something like that.
Yeah.
One thing I didn't like about Angel is it almost felt like a racist depiction of Hispanics.
I didn't want to go there, but yeah.
The hardcore girl raised by the molesting father who's not actually her dad, and it's like the molestation, like, that's never even really addressed. She's just like, don't molest me, and he goes, I wouldn't molest a mutant. She runs away, and it's, what? Where? How did we walk into this scene?
Morrison!
Because
it can't just be normal abuse, it has to be molestation.
But I mean, what happened to positive minority figures? Yeah?
Hey, Wolverine's a cool Canadian.
I would not call Wolverine a positive role model.
Especially in this comic, he does not give a fuck. He like punched that thing's brain out, that dinosaur guardian guy.
It was a robot, though.
Yeah, but I didn't know that until after the brain was out.
Robots have feelings, too.
Yeah, he like skewered the brain. It was like he punched through the skull and everything, but the brain came out okay.
The brain came out on the claws.
Yeah. Oh, well, this comic.
Oh, that's right. And Angel has a barfing problem. I forgot about that.
No, she doesn't have a barfing... It's not a problem. She has to... She has to... Like, you know how flies have to, like, throw up on their food so they can eat it?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Bugs do that.
That's disgusting.
That's what she has to do, because she's, like, a bug person.
It's really unfortunate.
So is she, like, Spider-Man, or is she a mutant?
She's a mutant.
But then she's not, like, a fly mutant.
She is... She has, like, insect wings, and she spits, like, acid.
She came out of a cocoon.
Yeah, she came out of a cocoon, too.
She metamorphed.
Okay, see, this is my problem with X-Men. It's like, new X-Men, it feels like... And this is what we were going to talk about last week, but then we forgot and we're going to add to this week. Like, there's a constant tide of more and more X-Men.
Well, yeah, and, because people are born.
Right, and as they say here, in 3 or 4 generations, there's only going to be mutants. You know? So you do need to constantly think of new ideas for new mutants. But it seems like they don't just, like, do, like, Iceman and, like, Wolverine. Like, hey, look, it's a dude that has healing or a dude that controls ice. They, like, have to get more and more further out there. When you could totally just do more, it's a dude that does this, it's a dude that does this. So, like, but, like, there's no, even under the conceit of X-Men, I don't see a way that she should be fly-powered.
Why?
I don't know, like, she should have the wings, or she should have the acid barf.
She can't have both?
It just, there's no reason that she should, I mean, other than to make her, like, a fly.
Wolverine has 2 powers.
Wolverine has one plot.
No, he has 2 powers.
Okay, what are them both?
He has the healing factor and the claws.
The claws are not a power. The claws were put into him.
No. In the movie, they were. But if you read Wolverine's origin story, he has the claws as a kid, and they're made of bone.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Emma Frost has 2 powers.
Emma Frost has 2 powers. Beast has 2 powers. He has 2 mutations.
But they're like, they're...
They're not related, necessarily. Okay. He has, like, super agility, and basically he has hands for feet when he's a teenager, and then he turns into a blue cat. And his feet change, and his hands change when he turns cat-like.
Okay, I don't want to talk about it on Beast, because I think that was one of the parts of the comic that I really did like was Beast.
I liked Beast a lot, too. I'm not saying this as a negative towards Beast. I'm just saying that it's okay for them to have more than one mutation.
I feel like they're trying extra hard to come up with new stuff, but do it in an extra freaky way, but to the point where it's not functional or useful, even in terms of story, right? Like Angel and Beast, or Angel and Beak, right? The bird kid, basically have the power that they have wings. That's great. We already have Warren Worthington, so how do we make them different? Well, she spits on her food and he has a beak, and he's more like a chicken than the bird. Like, that's literally all it is. They're basically Warren Worthington, but lamer and weirder. Just for the sake of being lamer and weirder.
Man, that's racist, Andy.
You don't even know what race Beak is.
He's a human.
Have a face.
He's a human.
No, he's not Australian.
That's species, that was like not race. That's the
three-faced guy.
He's Caucasian.
What if three-faced guy wasn't actually a mutant? I mean...
Then he's basically like... You know he reminded me of? A He-Man villain. Isn't there a He-Man villain that has multiple faces?
I don't know. But that's like a genetic... deformity that people have now. They're not mutants. They're just...
You know, at first, I didn't think he was a mutant. At first, I thought it was just like the art, like somebody shaking their head really fast. That's what I thought it was. And then it kept coming up on us. No, I guess it is a mutant.
So what were we talking about? Oh, yeah, your point was that they're trying to make up freaky new powers.
Yeah.
I think that's just... I think we could chalk that up to Grant Morrison, honestly.
Yeah, maybe. But, I mean, some of them work. Like, the Stepford Cuckoos are new, right? But I like them. I think their power is cool. Like, they are telepaths, and together they make one
supermind.
Well,
they're new to
like,
you, right? But, do you know, were they introduced in this?
Maybe I have no idea. But they're newer. You know? Like, because all the other ones that you named are the older ones. Wolverine, Beast, Iceman, like... Emma Frost.
Well, there's, like, Hope, who's, like, the new X-Men main character who came out, like, a few years ago. And her power, I don't even know what her power is, but she looks normal.
Hope.
Isn't she the baby that, like, Cable carries around?
Yeah, but she's a teenager now.
Oh, okay.
Because they traveled to the future, and then he raised her, and then they came back, and she was a teenager when they came back.
Yeah, X-Men.
That's time travel, that's not X-Men.
Wait, does this occur in continuity before or after End Song and War Song?
This, what we're reading now?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I'm going to guess after.
Well, we've seen the cuckoos.
No, I think this is before, because I think there's fewer cuckoos when we get there.
Because you're right.
Like
and Wolverine and Cyclops and Emma Frost have a relationship already.
Yeah.
Wait, I like how you phrase that as like 3 of them.
I meant to say
that they have a 4-way relationship. It's very free love.
So Jean Grey is dead again.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
At that point. And so
Emma Frost and Cyclops are getting it on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Andy, they're consenting adults.
What? I didn't say that.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, there's like some freaky ones, like the girl with mouths on her neck.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
I don't know. I'm not even sure. Like, I kind of agree with you that they go a little overboard.
We start running out of ideas.
Yeah, but... Maybe, but I don't think... Okay, you can run out of ideas, but I don't think they tried that hard. I agree, you can run out of ideas. Especially if you're trying to say in three or four generations that you're going to need 6 billion mutants to replace the normal human population. So you're going to need 6 billion different ideas.
That made no sense.
But we also, we talked about this when we were recording earlier, about how there would probably be some repetition in there somewhere.
Yes. Right? There can't be just one Jean Grey.
Yeah, there's going to be more than one telekinetic person.
Yeah.
There's more than one psychic. We have them... There's seven psychics in this comic.
Wait, seven or eight? Well, you got the five cuckoos, right?
Yeah.
Then you have Emma Frost. She's psychic.
Yeah.
Jean Grey. Charles.
Jean Grey is not... I guess she's psychic.
Yeah, she's psychic. She's psychokinetic.
Oh, okay, psychokinetic. There you go. That's the word.
The old woman who works with Mystique is a psychic.
Yeah, yeah.
Destiny? I thought she was She was like a clairvoyant.
Oh, she's a precog?
My bad.
Okay.
So there's still like an eight.
I'm talking about in this comic. There's lots of...
Cassandra.
Yeah.
But is she real or is she a spirit beast animal?
I'm pretty sure that she's close enough to real, considering like the damage.
Charles is spirit animal.
This was all just a really bad trip they had, like while taking mushrooms on a spiritual journey.
There's like nine telepathic people in this.
Yeah. So why can't there be more than one bug girl, Andy?
Why can't there be more than one Iceman? More than one Beast? It's just the bug girl is annoying, and I didn't like her.
If I can talk her down
on her mutant level,
Problem with her powers or her attitude?
Both.
Because she might just be a horrible person, which clearly she is.
She is. She's a horrible person. She's not a bad person. She's just really annoying.
Is she the one in First Class who betrays them? Is that the same person?
Ooh, I think you're right.
Well, there's another character called...
Oh, she's bad in the movies, too.
Can you let me finish? There's another X-Men character named Pixie who has those kinds of wings.
See, but in the movie, doesn't she say she wants to call herself Angel?
And then I was really mad because I was like, that's fucking Warren Warrington III, you bastards.
And she's kind of like a...
It's real angry.
I mean, she's kind of like a call girl in the movie, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Racist.
What? Why does that make me racist?
I don't know.
You were calling her a whore earlier. I was trying to...
Without provocation.
I was channeling the movie, obviously.
So...
I didn't appreciate the silent issue either.
Oh, see, but that's one that I did like.
You know why I didn't like the silent issue? Okay, so... Okay. Let me start over. Issue in and of itself is fine, but I really like the Marvel G.I. Joe comic from the 80s. I wasn't reading it in the 80s, but I've been collecting the trades because IDW republished them. And, like, the silent issue is G.I. Joe number 21, where Snake Eyes rescues Scarlet from Cobra. And I feel like this is an affront to that comic. And then I went and Googled it, and there's actually a lot of silent issues from Marvel, and they have a trade paperback called Nuff Said.
Yep.
And it doesn't have the G.I. Joe issue in it.
So your dislike of this issue is completely external.
It has nothing to do with this issue. Okay. As in and of itself.
I did like this issue. A lot. I think because it didn't have any of the freaky dialogue fuck-ups that the rest of it had. But there's also some... The scene with Jean Grey building a bridge and her red hair.
That was cool.
Those couple pages were awesome. There's some good art in this issue.
I loved her dialogue with Emma, where it was just, like, impressions that you get about what they're talking about.
Yeah, like, their facial stuff back and forth was cool. You mentioned the emoticons.
I liked those.
Look at her shoes.
Yeah, she's a fucking badass bitch.
Like, the check marks? I like that, because that's, like, the feeling you get when you're like, okay.
okay, see, but I felt like that was kind of cheating. Having the emoticons, because, like, the whole point of this, the whole point, we'll get there. The whole point of this Nuff Said comic is, like, that you don't need words to tell a good story. But apparently you still need emoticons, because you can't actually draw a face.
Yeah, properly. The G.I. Joe issue doesn't have emoticons in it. It just has,
like,
ninjas.
Like, you use the emoticons because you can't properly draw the face. Like, the point is they're not supposed to be communicating like that.
Yeah,
I liked the way it was done, but it felt like cheating.
It made sense to me because they're psychic. So.
That's true.
It's like impressions.
Okay.
It got real Grant Morrison-y at one point in this comic, too, when there was the snow globe full of sperm.
Oh, God, yeah.
That is the epitome of the Grant Morrison
moment. I was like, oh, here we go, the filth. Now we're reading the filth.
It's a snow globe full of sperm.
Ew. with Xavier's parents inside. And then it made sense when it's like, oh, okay, now we're going to watch Charles Xavier be conceived. And then the baby tries to choke. Then he straight up punch. One fetus punches the other.
Yeah.
I love how the mom falls down the stairs after that because she, like, miscarried from her babies punching each other.
Well, he punches her and then, like, tries to choke her out with an umbilical
cord. I like this episode until, or like this issue until it got to this.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Grant Morrison, have you ever held a baby? There's no way that a baby can throw a punch.
I don't think anyone lets Grant Morrison near their babies.
Like, there's nothing about this that even remotely could be.
It's funny, like, the escalation to that point. It's like, okay, Charles and Cassandra are sleeping. Chuck wakes up and he's like, the fuck is this? And then he straight up punches her.
And he looks over and says, who the fuck are you? And punches her.
And then she shoots him with blue laser beams. And then they come out of the mom also. Mom turns into a ghost.
Wait, what? When did she turn into a ghost?
It's just to show the motion of her falling down the stairs.
I was like, did I miss something?
Oh, God.
This is a good comic.
And then baby head.
I like how Jean Grey looks into the snow globe and sees all of that, though, and just kind of looks at it and then throws it on the floor.
Rosebud. This was a great comic, guys.
I'm sorry. I started off the hating.
Okay, so.
Okay, that moment was funny. I know this is horrible audio podcasting. Horrible audio podcasting, but that moment's funny where Jean Grey, like, uses the barf letters to say Emma. Say, Emma, hey, what's up? Thanks for all the help. And then they leave. Because she's been too busy kicking the fucking door.
Well, she got, like, halfway eaten by the door, too, right?
She's just like, it's just like she was dicking around the whole time.
Oh, this comic.
Alright, what do you guys think of their new costumes?
They're okay.
Whatever.
They're, like, less cheesy than some other things we've seen in the past.
True, except for Cyclops' jacket. Which is just like a big yellow X. I hated that.
The jackets I like. They look good on Zorn. They look good on Beast. I think jackets are not bad. It's like, when they're wearing, it's basically like a long sleeve turtleneck, but for some reason it's ribbed. Yeah, I don't get why. Why are you chilling around in a ribbed turtleneck? What function does a ribbed turtleneck? And then Wolverine's basically like wearing overalls the whole fucking time. Or no, they're not even overalls. They're like a lederhosen, like those German leather pants. They're just like pants with straps. But it's all one piece.
Andy, you could have done this podcast on your own.
I'm just ranting about this thing? Yeah, yeah, probably.
Okay, so what did we like about it?
What did you like about it?
You know, it's you know what? As a whole, it was an entertaining read. But it might have been entertaining because it's like so wacky. Unintentionally wacky.
What about you, Jen?
You know, it's like I said earlier, the writing itself was good. Like, reading their dialogues, if you can for a moment throw out your conception of what the X-Men have been to this point and say, like, okay, maybe these people are all assholes and be okay with that, it's pretty interesting. And aside from some weird like, anytime they try to get into the science of it, it just made me cringe. Where, the fucking thing where Beast says, humans have a gene that turns on when the species is about to die. It's like, well, what? No, don't. Don't do that. Don't talk about what you don't understand, Grant Morrison. And, like, dropping the science here was really bad. But aside from that, it was interesting. It was a good story. There was tension. The flow worked. It made sense. Like, you know, a threat's introduced, neutralized. We have some more rising action in the form of dealing with the press and hostility in general.
And dealing with the human and the yeah. What do they call it? So the third species?
Yeah. The humans trying to place themselves above the mutants again. And then, oh, wait, we find out that Xavier is actually his twin sister. Because this is Jerry Springer. And then... and then he comes back from space, and they duke it out, and it's like, okay, that's not bad, honestly.
I actually really like the part when the Shi'ar arrived on Earth, and we got to see the Imperial Guard fight. Yeah. I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
I really like the Wild Sentinels and the Ecuadorian Master Mold. I thought it was cool how like it evolved with the technology that was around it.
Yeah, actually, there's a part that relates to that when the Sentinel first attacks Genosha, and there's when Magneto's sitting in his chair, when Magneto dies, and the fist is like made out of airplanes because it has like wings and jet engines, but it looks like a fist.
Yeah,
I thought that was a really cool art.
Yeah, that stuff was awesome. And then, like, and then the extermination's over, and you kind of wonder, okay, wait, but what happened to all the Sentinels? And that Master Mold is still there.
Well, it only made four, like, big Sentinels.
Yeah.
And it made a bunch of the Wild Sentinels.
Yeah, so then you think, well, they didn't, like, defeat them. They didn't go down there and destroy the Master Mold. Right? Or did they? Did I forget about that?
I don't know. That's a good question.
I don't think they destroyed that Master Mold. So then you kind of... Because all this other shit with Cassandra Nova's coming up, you kind of forget about them as that happens. And then they come back later and you go, oh, fuck. They're not gone. They just adapted this nanotechnology and they found a way to kill all the mutants really fucking effectively.
Yeah. Like,
that was cool. I really liked that. There's a lot of stuff in here that I really liked.
It was insidious.
Zorn's pretty cool, too. I like
his
character.
See, that moment was awesome too. When the guardsman lands on Earth and says, "Please go tell everyone, please, please," and then Fulbright sped, "Moo." That was cool.
That was really sad. It's like he's dying and he's just talking to some cows.
Well, he doesn't know.
And he doesn't die because they bring him back later. Well, they don't bring him back, but the other Imperial guards like find him.
Yeah, I mean. I guess it's just... It also is kind of telling about what other, stellar races know about humans.
Yeah.
I mean, humans are always the center of things in comics, of course, but, you know, he comes and he doesn't know that cows are just, like...
Cows.
Yeah. They're not really bright enough to relay messages of that complexity.
So, okay. Who was your favorite character? Because this is the running theme. Whenever we have a book about a team, we talk about our favorite character.
Beast.
Yeah?
He held his integrity even when Charles Xavier was fucking with his mind. And that was really, really cool. Because he had been having, like, all the self-doubt and self-loathing. And then, you know, Charles is trying to drill that into him, and he's like, no, I love literature and music and poetry and art, and this is who I am, and fuck you. And, you know, he actually manages to muster up the self-confidence to escape that.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the beak comes in and pummels him into a coma at that point, but it was refreshing to see a nice moment where instead of the mutant being like, I'm so sad because I'm a mutant and I'm really, you know, down about it, and then the friend comes over and is like, no, we do good, and then they're like, okay. It was a self-justification, and it was nice to hear from Frank McCoy, who's always so or Hank McCoy, not Frank, from Hank McCoy, who's always just so down on himself. It's nice to see him, like, appreciate who he is, because he's one of the coolest characters.
Mm-hmm. What about you, David?
Angel. Just kidding.
I was already fucking smack you. I mean, you're entitled to your opinion.
We haven't really talked... I liked Zorn a lot, even though we didn't really get to know him that much. I mean, first he was in... We haven't talked about the annual at all yet, but...
Yeah.
His kind of, like, origin is in the annual. And then, I don't know, his powers are cool. Like, that's kind of a way out there power that's... Well, his... I guess it's not really a power, it's his mutation. It's cool, and it's kind of a far out there one, but... It doesn't really make sense. His head is a star. Did you get that?
Yeah.
And I don't know. I thought that was neat.
Yeah, that's a mutation.
And he's like a super powerful. He's super powerful, but he uses his powers to heal and stuff. So I think that's cool.
Yeah, and he's the kind of character who seems like he has the confidence and that he is good at keeping it together.
And his character design is pretty awesome. Like, yes. His helmet looks cool.
He fucking looks sick. He looks good in that silly X jacket that you don't like.
You know, I realize it's not the jackets. It's Hank McCoy's shirt.
I like him. I think he looks good in the shirt.
But the shirt is just a big yellow X. I think his shirt is dumb.
But it looks good on him.
I just think it's a dumb shirt.
Look, okay. David, just because it might not look good on you doesn't make it a dumb shirt.
I'm not, like, jealous of him and his ex shirt.
Why are you gelling?
Gelling like Magellan. Wait, that's
that. I mean, I also, I'm with Jen. I think, out of all the characters in here, we get two that really are developed. And that's Emma Frost.
Mm-hmm.
You, her character gets fleshed out as the comic goes on.
She's really
on.
Cool in this.
And you see Hank McCoy... Not only do his self-justification in that scene, but then later on when he's talking to Jean, he's like, that insult didn't hurt because I'm afraid of becoming a worm. That insult hurt because I'm afraid I might lose art and poetry and music. Like, I'm not afraid of becoming a super intelligent worm. I'm afraid of being able to lose the ability to do these things that are important to maintaining humanity and my sanity and... These things are important not just to me, but also in the abstract. And if I become this thing, then I will lose those.
Well, those are the things that define him, right?
Yeah, and I think that you see that he's afraid of it not from the base fear of, oh my god, I'm going to be a fucking worm and that's hideous. He's not afraid of what he looks like. He's fine with that. He's come to terms with that by now. By now, he's afraid that what he looks like is going to affect who he is. And that's going to start switching the other way. So that what he is going to start to affect who he is instead of... the opposite that it's been for so long. And I think that development was really cool. Well, we ready to rate this?
Yeah, you know, well, should we talk about the art a little bit?
Sure, go ahead.
We should usually talk about it. One thing I noticed is the Shi'ar in here actually look kind of bird-like, because they're supposed to be, like, avian, kind of.
Really?
Ah, I never
knew
that.
Yeah, they have... Huh. A lot of them have... feathers kind of looking things. You can't tell with Lalandra because she's wearing, like, armor.
Yeah.
But in this one, they kind of look bird-like.
That's cool. I just thought that was cool. I didn't even realize they were supposed to be avian.
Because they don't look like it.
Yeah.
Ever.
I always think of the Centauri from Babylon 5. Like, with
the hair crest
thing.
One Gladiator is, like, one of the main Shi'ar characters, and he's not actually Shi'ar. He's some other race.
It's part of the Imperium.
Yeah. But there's, like, Lalandra and that other dude look like... See, he kind of looks bird-like.
Oh, yeah.
What's that guy's name?
Whatever that dude is.
The Sage. I forget what his name is.
Yeah. Ahsoka. Something like that.
Yeah, I'm sure his name's Ahsoka.
It was like Akari or something.
Yeah.
Akali? I don't
Akali,
remember.
Akali Lake. What did you think of the art, Jen?
I liked the earlier issues more than the later ones. And I know the artist changed. And it wasn't that there was anything even wrong with the art in the later issues. It just... It didn't jive with my style. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. everybody's kind of pudgy in a weird way. Okay. Every time I thought the art was kind of going okay, you would get a close-up on Wolverine's face, and he always looked like he'd just gotten punched and was on drugs.
Yeah, his lips were all puffy.
His lips were puffy. His eyes were never, like, the same size. His head was kind of squished. His hair
was, taking a lot of punches.
But he heals them.
You don't heal right.
Maybe he's just ugly.
No, but not ugly in, like, any kind of natural ugly sort of... Just, like... poorly drawn. His face is always... I don't know. Yeah.
Alright, Andy, let's rate it.
Okay.
You go first.
I'm gonna give this, I'm going between a 1.5 and a 2.
Wow.
I'm gonna go with a 2. I would give it a 1.5, but there's a lot of stuff in here that I legitimately do like. I think Zorn is cool. I think the overall story is cool. I think the idea of the Wild Sentinels is cool. You know, I'm a frost in this, like beast in this. I mean, in theory, this comic does a lot of stuff I like, and I should enjoy it. But my problem is that Morrison comes in a lot, and Morrison's it all the fuck up. And whenever I'm kind of jiving, and whenever I'm starting to roll with this comic, thinking, oh, yeah, this is kind of cool, oh, what the fuck is this, happens. And then I'm just immediately torn out of the role I was on with this comic, and just, it just... The Morrison thing happens, the weird shit comes in, the dialogue doesn't feel right. Hey, what the fuck is that fetus doing? Those moments pull me out of the comic. What's funny is that that line, hey, what the fuck is that fetus doing, sounds like a joke, but twice it wasn't. Twice, really, what the fuck is that fetus doing, actually happened in the comics. So, 2.
Alright, I'll go next.
David.
No, I can go first.
I don't know, I just arbitrarily picked one.
I'll give this a 3. I found it a bit better than average. It had problems. I thought it was actually pretty reader-friendly for Grant Morrison. Let's put it that way. Because I don't think his writing is in any way bad. I think he's a very creative person who writes well. I think sometimes what he writes is beyond me. And maybe beyond a bunch of other people. And you could argue, yes, the point of the writer is to communicate effectively to his audience, but this is also art. So, you know, like, not everyone gets things that are...
weird.
Yeah. It doesn't need to be gotten by everyone. As long as some people enjoy it, good on them. But the problems were enough to make it not the strongest comic for me. I feel like there were actually some parts where the plot got a little loose. Like, we were dealing with too much at a time. I think earlier I said, like, oh, the jumps always made sense between different scenes, but sometimes we'd flash to Cyclops hanging out in space with the Shi'ar, and it was kind of like, how'd he get there? So that bothered me a little. But I don't know, it was just... I think a writer also has to keep in mind the tone of the characters he's writing for, and these are not Grant Morrison's characters. He can't do with them everything he pleases, and he needs to remember that, you know, Scott and Jean have to be a little fluffy bunny, and Charles Xavier always has to be the strong-willed idealist, and Beast's self-doubt always leads to something more cutesy than grim. And you can't forget that. It makes them not the X-Men. So, yeah, a 3.
Okay. Do you mind if I say something, David?
Please, before you go ahead.
I'm going to change my rating to 1.5. I'm going to bring it... Because as you were talking, I realized everything I like about this comic has nothing to do with the fact that it's X-Men. It has to do with the villains and the story, and Grant Morrison is putting characters into fictional bodies that they shouldn't be in. This story, I think I would have liked a lot better and would have worked a lot better if it hadn't have been these people that have 15 years of history attached to them. Which is why I think the ones that he comes up with, or the ones that are newer, are the ones that I don't mind as much. Like, Zorn, I think, is awesome. The Stepford Cuckoos are cool. A lot of the ones that are more organic to this comic are the ones that I like. I have a problem with the ones that he puts weird shit onto. And as much as I say that I liked Beast, I was reading through the notes, and the other reason I wanted to bring it back down is because Grant Morrison, for shits and giggles, has Beast say, I don't like you, I don't want to into you, I'm not even sure I want to date a human, and I might be gay. You know, for shiggles. Why not make Beast maybe gay, too? Like, it just...
Doesn't he call himself a Hindu sex god at some point, too?
Like,
yeah, that was
fucking
weird.
Why? It's not necessary, it's not Beast, there's no point, it's not... You're just being a dick now, Grant. You're just being a dick, changing the character out of for funsies. So, yeah, back. I'm modifying it down to 1.5. Okay, David?
Alright, I'm going to give this a solid 2.5. It was a fun read. Like Jen said, I thought the writing was pretty good. It's a good story overall, but there's a lot of things that, for the reason, the problems Andy had with it, make you stop and go, what the fuck? Or, wow, that's kind of wacky. Like, a fetus punching out another fetus. The art's pretty solid, and, you know, I think, even though we got 3 different pencilers over this run of issues, it was pretty good through the whole time, and it's not the first X-Men book you should pick up. If you like Grant Morrison and the X-Men, yeah, give it a read, but there's better stuff out there if you like X-Men. So I give this average. Not that excited about it, but I didn't hate it. So there you go.
Okay. Well, next week we're going to wrap up our X-Men series. We're going to read, I think it's Astonishing X-Men. Let me double check. Yes, Astonishing X-Men Volume 1 by Joss Whedon.
Yeah. It's a good comic. I read it already.
Which collects issues 1 through 12. So we're going to do the big volume. I mean, though, I know it like cuts it up into little volumes, and there's another series that cuts it up into big volumes. So we're going to do the big volume, just like we do with New X-Men.
This is really good, though. And I'm not saying it. Yeah. I'm not just saying that because it's Joss Whedon.
I have confidence that it's good because of Joss Whedon.
Well, I've read it before. I read it a few years ago, and I remember really enjoying it. So, yeah.
Okay. So yeah, that'll be next week. Until then, if we confused you in any way and you don't know what we're reading next, or you want to know what's going to happen after X-Men because you want to get off this train ride after reading Grant Morrison, you'll get on at the next train. We have the next series listed and everything else, tons of more information on our website, which is www.atomicpiratesupercast.com. And as always, you can ask us directly or request that we read a comic. We're down for doing requests. Fuck it, why not? By sending us an email
at atomicpiratesupercast@gmail.com.
And as always, you can ask us or, you know, post on our things, walls, timelines, feeds on the social medias, which is like twitter.com/APSupercast or facebook.com/APSupercast. And as always, please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
Cool. Till next week, everybody.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Is this thing on? Welcome to another shiny episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts, Andrew, David, and Jen. This week our topic is New X-Men by Grant Morrison and... When I was just a little boy, and I was looking for a nice and song and... Oh, bloody hell, this thing's running.